Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast, the podcast in which Stephen El Trogi, Barnabas Piper, and Ted Kluck cheerfully rant about all the things that don't matter all that much. And now, buckle up for today's episode.
Gentlemen, good to be back, as always, on the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck. They are Barnabas Piper and Ronnie Martin. Fellas, how we doing?
Doing good.
We're doing quite well.
Guys, you know what occurs to me, man? This show is it's so kind of organic. I mean, you sit here in the studio and you think, you know, I'm in this elevated place, just kind of above the fray. And I think we learned a couple things, man, last week, and that is that this program is all about relationships, man. We learned that homeschooling saves lives, and we learned it not only via the review, but then the 900-word essay that followed it.
Which we retweeted from the Happy Rant Twitter account.
You can read about that. So in true kind of reformed guy fashion, you know, an issue really hasn't been discussed until there's been an essay written about it. So
is that the measure of discussion, or does there need to be a counterpoint to the point?
Dude, see, ideally, the thing just goes on indefinitely with people
right. It's a counterpoint to the
other.
Counterpoint.
The counterpoint to the counterpoint to the counterpoint.
So, yeah. So can we like conscript a listener to write the counterpoint? Because I'm pretty sure none of the three of us really want to take that task on.
I would like to do that. I would like to commission a listener to write the counterpoint to that.
And your so
if anybody wants to write in and suggest themselves as the counterpoint pointer,
we will mention you by name, and we will thank you. And if we ever make Happy Rant t-shirts, you will have one.
Maybe we should just give away a free book, Pipe. How about that?
We can do that. We have all three of us have an option we could send, and they could pick one, perhaps.
And I feel like this is a not awkward way to give away a book, right? Because one of our listeners brought this up, just the whole idea of, you know, how do you give away a copy of your own book without sort of looking like an arrogant douche? And I think giving it away on your self-serving podcast is a good way to do that, because there's nothing arrogant about
it. It's kind of one layer removed from actually giving it to somebody. Like, I couldn't wrap one of my books and give it to my siblings as a Christmas present and say, hey, this I saw this and thought of you.
Here's your whole childhood on the page.
Well, you know, given we're talking about either unbelief or complaining, it would really be a bad gift on Christmas Day for a healthy member of the family.
Although, as a parent, giving a book called Stop Your Complaining would be a really good Christmas gift, considering the amount of complaining children do after all the presents are done being opened.
It's true. It would be the present that they would take home with them and appreciate in the end.
Stocking stuffers lead it off, and the book about complaining is like it's the closing credits on
every
the
kid's dream,
gifts.
Man. Every kid's
and
dream.
And if you buy now, you get a free Stop Your Complaining yo-yo.
So let me ask you guys this. So I recently used Goodreads, you know, this sort of reader nerd social media outlet that I thoroughly enjoy, to do a giveaway of some of my books. So it's just like basically entering a drawing so people can enter and give it away. Is that a douchey way to give away your books, or is that an acceptable author platformy way to do it? I'm not sure.
It's acceptable author platformy.
Or is it both? Maybe the author platform is inherently a bit arrogant.
Guys, if we even have to ask what's acceptable, I think it's pretty, you know, I think we can be sure that none of it's really that acceptable. So you just got to be able to lower your standards and start handing away your books, since
just
somebody's probably
muck,
not
man.
Doing a great job selling them.
And here's another question. So, you know, you go to some coffee shops or whatever, and they have these little like bookshelves where there's the occasional, there's usually like three or four romance novels and a Tom Clancy novel and like maybe some leadership book from 1964.
The Iacocca biography.
Yes, exactly.
Answer is no, Pipe. We've never put our books on that shelf.
You speak for yourself. I'm asking both of you, and Ted didn't answer.
No, I never have, but I was actually speaking at a book at a publishing conference one time, and left a little time for Q&A. I had a gentleman raise his hand. And he wanted to talk about book marketing. And this guy's shtick was every time he would go to a restaurant, he would just sort of casually bring along a copy of his book and just sort of lay it out on the table such that people walking by would ask him about it, and the waitress would ask him. And he informed me that he had sold several copies of books that way.
Wow.
He would say, it's yours for $10, and they would say, sure, yeah. I'll forego yeah. the tip that you're going to give me, and he would say something, take the book instead.
Something charming and jaunty, like, "Why, yes, I am the author of."
Guys, I think what we're looking at here is marketing genius. He sold,
dude. It's platform.
Was this
twos and threes?
Was this guy's name Chaz Marriott? That's the real question.
His name was actually his name was Michael Hyatt. To be fair,
those are the first 10 copies of what is now an enormous platform.
What is now an enormous worldwide phenomenon?
His name is J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Right.
No, I mean, if I was a waitress, I might actually buy one of J.K. Rowling's books and then immediately ask for a signature, because that would be amazing. Not
as long as it's
Chaz
a J.K. book, because really, if we talk about her post-Potter books, it's baffling.
What was her pseudonym for these other books that she used for a while?
I don't even remember, but it was just, yeah, like it did not go well.
She tried to write like a legitimate novel, right?
One was it? She wrote a mystery novel, and then she wrote one that was more like a town drama kind of novel. And I read about a third of that one, and I was like, the writing's pretty good, but it's really boring.
Right. That's exactly what my wife said. Good commentary, Pipe.
Yeah. Well, your wife's a genius, so that makes total sense.
It's like our own little book group here.
Listen into book club, everybody.
It's basically a book club today is all it is.
That's really all it is. You know what, though? We should I want to get back into this issue of conflict and this issue of us just really doing life with our listeners, because Big R, you had a comment off the air when we were just chatting in the green room before the program, and you felt like there was some tension between yourself and a mutual friend of ours, one Mr. Bartizzi, Zach Bartles. Talk about that.
Well, you know, Bartizzi, as we like to call him, I clicked on my phone after an appointment, and I saw that there was 327 tweets.
Okay.
From him to me about some issues that I wasn't entirely really up to speed with. So I thought, like Barti, was there a breakdown between the two of us? Like what's happening with this?
Was there a falling out?
Is it possible he just had a breakdown?
Is it possible that I am the last con?
Oh,
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Barti right now. So
Are you trying to play saint in the relationship?
I don't know. I was confused. So I'm just saying, hey, Barti, if you're listening, brother, on my end, I mean, it's golden. Like, we're gold, pony boy. We're gold.
We're gold, pony boy, folks. Nice. That's reconciliation. That's what reconciliation
Anytime you can slip in a pony boy reference, that makes for good reconciliation, too.
I think that's what does it, right? Yeah, exactly.
People feel respected when you call them pony boy.
It's the modern Matthew 18. I mean,
it really is.
It contextualizes Matthew 18. We're in there.
Well, we're nothing if not a conciliatory bunch.
Absolutely. Barnabas, do we have any business to take care of vis-a-vis sponsors? Is Lim Street still on board, or has that ship sailed?
Their sponsorship has ended. However, if you go back and look at past show notes, you can see all the details. Lim Street Mobile was a great sponsor, and thanks to them. Our sponsor today is, and as it has been, is Resonate Recordings. They are the fine people who help us get this thing chopped up, edited, posted, although we don't really do a lot of chopping up, folks. What you hear is what you get. We're not pulling anything out unless Ted cusses too many times.
No rules, no boundaries.
That's right. It's an authentic conversation. So Resonate Recordings, you can go to resonaterecordings.com, find out more about what they do. If your church is looking at getting sermon audio cleaned up, edited, posted, if you're looking at starting a podcast, or if you're an independent musician and looking for a studio to work with, they do all three of those things. And you can find out more at resonaterecordings.com. They do excellent work and quick turnaround and have been a pleasure to work with. So thank you to them. And we'll probably talk about them more at the end. But thanks to that sponsor.
Excellent. Fellas, we got some things to tackle today, one of which is we have a fan, and we have a fan who I think is
– That right there is news. We have a fan.
I know. It's huge news. But we have a fan who I think is overstepping his bounds a little bit. There's a little bit too much familiarity. I feel like I don't remember the name of the movie about, you know, the kind of Hollywood stalkers, but I sort of feel like I feel vulnerable in that way.
It's a little bit like the movie Cable Guy as well.
That's it. It was Cable Guy, but just the kind of stalkery dynamic within you know, a group of people. But anyway, this guy was blowing us up on our cell phones with texts and topics. But one of the things that he wanted to talk about was Ronda Rousey and girl fighting. So if you follow sports at all, you've probably seen that popular female MMA fighter Ronda Rousey was knocked out last week and created a lot of buzz and a lot of chatter in the sports world. But his question was, how do we feel about girl cage fighting, and would we let our daughters do that? Now, I don't have daughters, so I'm going to throw that to you guys first, man, for commentary.
Ronnie? Yeah, Pipe, why don't you take that? Because I just feel like this is so much trouble. This is so much chauvinistic trouble ahead with us here.
I see that big steaming pile, and I'm just going to put my foot in it. I don't watch MMA at all, period.
Right.
I follow it from a distance enough to know kind of who some of the key players are at any given time. And I mean, if you've spent 15 minutes in the last month watching ESPN, there's a 50% chance you've seen something about Ronda Rousey. She has been all over that because she's the most dominant female fighter probably in history, mainly because that female fighting has not been around that long.
Yeah, kind of this like Mike Tysonian figure, though, in terms of like the fast knockouts, and she was undefeated. And
they kind of call her that too, right? They compare her with Tyson, which is really bizarre.
Because she's a beast in terms of like in terms of just sheer hitting power. She destroys people.
Yeah, and like persona wise, she kind of had that tough persona, and you know, the whole thing.
So I don't have real qualms about females fighting females.
Right.
I would have an issue if that crossed gender lines. Like if they tried to do the Battle of the Sexes tennis match between who was that? Billie Jean King. And Bobby Riggs. Is that who it was?
Yeah, Bobby Riggs.
And I mean, if they did that, and so all of a sudden, like, I don't know, pick your favorite lightweight male MMA fighter fighting against Ronda Rousey, I would have a real issue with that.
Why lightweight, Pipe? Why'd you have to go lightweight? Why do I have to be the lightweight MMA fighter?
To make weight classes fair, because she weighs about 127 pounds or something like that.
I just don't know what you're trying to insinuate by that.
I'm calling all female fighters lightweights, metaphorically and literally, is what I was
just trying to get
at.
You in trouble so that I don't. Yes, carry on.
Yeah, so that our nice sign off friend Rachel Held Evans will come after me. Although
who do you think would win in a fight between between our former co-host and Rachel Held Evans? Like a cage fight, an MMA cage fight.
It's no question.
Well, Rachel Held Evans would kill him because Steven would be like honor bound not to hit a woman.
Because he was homeschooled. He has this honor code, this sort of integrity that even the squared circle, even the cage could not
unleash. The way that it works is that you are allowed to disparage women and look down on them if you come from the very conservative viewpoint, but you may never ever lay a hand on them. So how that works.
These are interesting. These are fine, kind of fine tooth distinctions here, Barnabas.
But that's because he took that hike when he was 13 up in the mountains, and a group of men like knighted him. Right? What happened?
Yeah, with Aragorn's sword. That's right.
Right. Exactly.
And so the second question, would I let my daughters fight? If they were passionately interested in it, I don't know that I would push them straight into MMA, but I would certainly let them do martial arts, if they wanted to try jiu-jitsu or taekwondo or whatever. And if it went that way, and then I saw that they were able to make a career out of it, even if it was just a career up until they turned, 28 or 30, I wouldn't probably stand between them and doing that.
Interesting.
And I would probably go cheer for them. And let's be honest, it would be way more interesting than going to a ballet recital. No offense to my 7-year-old who does ballet, but
wow. Okay,
Ronnie, your turn. Now that I have offended everybody who listens to this podcast.
Yeah, you just did. Let me just try to bow out of this one gracefully by saying, with no uncertainty, I would have never been capable of producing a daughter that would have been drawn to MMA fighting.
yeah. You and M. I don't think that would have.
It's literally impossible, DNA wise.
Just not literally a real, impossible. Not a real aggressive, combative streak in.
No, I mean pretty combative because I have this Italian Portuguese background. Yes, but it's all verbal combat. Yeah, nothing physical, nothing violent.
If they had verbal MMA, then you guys would be contenders as well.
Oh, I mean my entire family fights verbal MMA at every holiday. I mean that's what we do. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So. I mean, for white people without sort of Portuguese Italian. Heritage. I feel like we need like passive aggressive MMA. You know what I mean?
Well, before we started this podcast, Ronnie came from an elders meeting at his church. That's sort of passive aggressive MMA.
Yeah, you know what? Be. I think you nailed that one, Pipe. Yeah. I mean, I think that's accurate. I think for every elders meeting that goes on in every evangelical church this week, it's going to be a form of verbal MMA. Let's be honest.
I think every women's Bible study is like most passive of the passive aggressive MMA.
Yeah. I mean, see, I just think those are straight up aggressive.
Dude, that's like reality television, guys. Honestly, like you don't even need TV when your lady is in one of those Bible studies. Like she comes home on Wednesday morning after
the Southern Baptist Convention or something.
Oh yeah, dude, she comes home on Wednesday morning after one of those things, and it's just like lay it out there. You know,
yeah,
you
get just limp, torn limb from limb.
Dude, torn limb from limb, just, kind of flops down on the sofa.
Limping
into the
house,
bloody.
Barely having
any life left,
Clothes just torn.
Well, the other option
is so uplifting for you.
The other option is coming in with like a real triumphant look and like picking the flesh of another person out of their teeth with like a knife because they were the ones.
Yeah, Pipes, in other words, they won.
Yeah, exactly.
They were the winners that day.
Put the aggressive in the passive aggressive. Yep. Yeah, they destroyed somebody's Dolce & Gabbana glasses and their coach purse, and it was lovely.
Oh, yeah. They walk in. You're like, you're the winner. We're having waffles this morning. I mean, that's it right there. Boom.
Right. That's right. Well, fellas, we should move on before, like you said, we alienate everyone who's still listening. Got another interesting fan-submitted topic. And this, Barnabas, was this the same fan, the one who's kind of been stalking us all week? Can you confirm that?
Remind me of the topic again. Show prep has slipped my mind.
Yeah, the topic was the film director M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes.
And the question was whether or not Shammy can bounce back from some of these disastrous films that he's made of late.
Yes.
And it was sort of an artistic question.
Yes, the fan was the same. And in fact, by this time was actually acting like a weird character from an M. Night Shyamalan movie. So
it's almost like this fan is trying to like kind of produce the show from the shadows, from afar.
Yeah, kind of the man behind the curtain.
The guy behind the guy behind the guy, as it were.
Absolutely.
But the question I think is a good one. So, if you're in an artistic endeavor like this director, I mean, is there a chance for him to bounce back? Is the career over after a couple of critical and commercial disasters, or is there a future here?
Gosh, as a massive M. Night fan, yeah. I think movie industry, I think they can always bounce back. He just needs the movie. He just needs to go back to what he did that is most classic in his arsenal of filmmaking capabilities, and that is to just do the mysterious movie with the unexpected zinger ending. Yep. And he just has to have the right script. And I think he's going to come back. I think he's going to do it. Nope.
I think for him to bounce back, and I realize this fan said that he really only wanted your two opinions, but since I'm on the mic and he is not, I will speak my mind.
Pipe, you say whatever you want to say right now.
This is a safe place.
Okay. Well, I feel like in order for Shyamalan – how is it pronounced? Is it Shyamalan? Is that right?
Shyamalan.
Shyamalan? Okay. Yeah. Well, all right. For him to bounce back, I feel like he might need to go off script. And that's not a bad pun, but like off of his own script where he always did the weird plot twist at the end. Because it was to the point where you just went into a movie knowing it's going to be – he sets up this entire framework of things and then there's a twist at the end. I mean, what was Sixth Sense was his first really big one, right?
Yeah,
and so that set the tone, and then almost every movie thereafter had a big twist at the end. So what if he came out with one that that didn't follow that pattern? Because maybe the movies that he's made have been flops because people knew the twist was coming and were just kind of disappointed by what it was.
No, I follow that logic, except he did a couple of movies that were a little – he did one that was so bad. It was called The Happening, which – basically had the non-twist twist.
Was that after everybody had already kind of given up on him, so most people would have never seen it?
Yeah, and I think that there's a way for him to do a compelling – because to watch an M. Night movie and there not be a twist, it's going to be watching that one Will Smith and Son film he did a couple of years ago called like Earth something. Yeah. And you just like that's not M. Night Shyamalan, you know what I mean?
Right.
Although that's just not M. Night. The title Earth something Sounds Earth very much like an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
That's got legs.
Yeah, I know. What was that, Big T? Do you remember? It was called Earth.
No, I know, man. I know what you're talking about. I also don't remember.
They were
the
like space rangers who came back to Earth, yes. And Earth was basically an overrun jungle with, you know, saber-toothed tigers and stuff, right?
Yeah, that with one? No twist. Like, that was the twist.
Big R, what's your favorite Shammy film, if you don't
mind? I'm going to get a little controversial right now because technically you're supposed to say – If you're not that cool, you say I like Sixth Sense, or you liked the Signs,
the one with the aliens or whatever.
Yeah, if you're indie guy, you say you like Unbreakable. But I like The Village, man. I really
like
The Village.
I actually love The Village. I feel like The Village had like major kind of church culture implications in it.
Absolutely, and the fact that the twist was kind of a non-twist too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It was interesting.
No, was there passive-aggressive MMA in it? I never saw The Village.
Just a little bit at the end, Pipe. Just a little bit.
Yeah. See, having never seen The Village, I really liked Unbreakable, but I didn't know until about a year ago that that was an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I watched it because of the people in it and really liked it because I tend to like just comic book movies and that kind of thing anyway. I thought the two big ones, Signs and Sixth Sense, were both. I really liked Signs at the time. I couldn't stand Sixth Sense. I thought it was a heinously boring.
Yeah,
movie.
And you know, Unbreakable was very. When you look at the back catalog of M. Night, I feel like Unbreakable is the one that feels like it least fits in, categorically speaking.
Maybe that's why I liked it because it didn't feel like his. Like, I never would have known, and I was talking about comic book movies with somebody, and they said that that was a Shyamalan movie, and I was like, I was very much caught off guard. So,
yeah, and I think Ben, I think Shyamalan is like, it's like watching a Friday the 13th movie. It's like you're like, you want that level of predictability. Like, I need to know when I watch M. Night that there's going to be a twist, and he's going to put it in a place that I'm at least not expecting. And
yeah,
so
you
it's
watch
like
it for
I go
the
there wanting to see.
You know, it'd be like watching a John Hughes movie that wasn't about like. Yeah. You know, high schools in the 80s, like it just wouldn't feel right, you know?
Yeah.
Like you go to it for a certain reason.
But he just needs to make the best of what his branding is. So in other words, like whatever he can do in terms of what he has developed as a brand, man, he just hasn't had the script.
I mean, if Judd Apatow can continue to make movies about adults getting high and acting like children, then Shyamalan ought to be able to continue to make movies with the expected unexpected at the end.
I mean, absolutely. You'd think, right? I mean, if it is at all a fair world, we should be able to expect that.
Now, Big R, while we're on movies for a minute, there's a huge bit of movie news. The movie is dropping here in a few days on Thanksgiving Day. I assume we have plans in the works to drive to a midway point between Ashland and West Tennessee and watch the film Creed together.
I already have the tickets booked in Toledo for the 6 p.m. showing on Thanksgiving Day.
No,
so
beautiful
Toledo. We'll see each other there for sure.
You you may need to look at a map. I'm not sure that's halfway.
No, Toledo is our town, man. We've had so many great business meetings.
All right. Well, good. I mean, I'm not going to stand between two friends in their movie viewing. You said halfway, and I'm thinking in my head, Toledo's like maybe a third of the way.
I meant halfway in kind of a meet me halfway across the sky sort of way.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, Piper just has a handle on geography. I didn't know that.
He does,
you?
Man. Wow. He's a smart guy though. Yeah, he's a real smart guy. Maybe we can hit that hotel restaurant and get some more tortilla soup as well.
Absolutely, but let's get back to the movie because I think our listeners should know.
This is the one with Rocky training
Apollo Creed's son,
played
this
by Michael
Rocky
B.
7.
Jordan. Correct.
This is Rocky 7.
Rocky 7. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Big R, continue, man. You were gonna say.
I mean, it's Rocky 7, and again, I want the audience to know that I am the least sports-minded person in the world, but I think you mentioned this in one of the earlier podcasts, Big T. I love sports movies.
Yes.
And I'm a huge Rocky fan, and me and your love, the love that we both have for each other also extends to that last Rocky movie, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really
Balboa.
Does, man. Rocky Balboa, yeah, you
Which
and
was,
I were
I
both.
Think was a great Rocky movie.
You know, we were just emotionally kind of brought to our knees by that picture together, and I'm so glad we watched it together because it was a safe place to kind of get emotional about what
was
happening.
It was a safe place, and then when I went on Yahoo yesterday, I also discovered that Sylvester Stallone is getting Oscar nods and hype and buzz already for Creed.
Dude, unbelievable. And is he not due? I mean, you know, I think what a way to – you know, what a way to
bring back 1976.
What a way to bring back 1976, which was only like, you know, 40 years ago now. And a great way to kind of mark the midway point of the series, because I'm sure there are going to be five or six more Rocky pictures before it's all said.
If nothing else, he deserves like a Lifetime Achievement Awards just for the Rocky movies.
Absolutely.
I mean, yes, he has an impressive body of work in terms of quantity of movies.
And an impressive body just in general. Let's be honest.
I was going to just stop at body. But he deserves it. He deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award just for those. Ronnie, I did notice something. Your love of sports movies could explain your disinterest in sports.
I think there's a lot. I think you just said a lot.
Because those two
in the movies, you don't actually have to, you know, bother with the actual sports.
And they in no way resemble the actual sports. And
they contain something that sports doesn't contain. For me, I'm going to be vulnerable right now, which is romance.
Keep digging. Yes, there is. There's a lot of romance, man. Now, I will say as a fan of actual sports that, I mean, I think, and Pipe, hear me out on this. I think one of the reasons why we watch actual sports is to get that moment. You know what I mean? That redemptive kind of romantic moment where the underdog wins, or where there's just some kind of signature performance that makes you go, ah, this is why I love the sport. And but I will say that you have to slog through a lot of it to get those glimmers and glimpses.
Yeah, a lot of water bottles, a lot of dudes in tight pants playing with weird oblong brown balls. Yeah, there's a lot to slog through with that to get
folks,
to those
that's Ronnie Martin on brown balls
where they slap each other on the rear end. There's a lot to get through to get to those moments.
Whereas in the sports movie, you get to see about 12 minutes of sports highlights interspersed with a lot of dramatic relational stuff. And I tend to like sports movies. So this is not a shot. Just looking at the difference and the fact that you have such a passionate connection to sports movies and the exact opposite connection with actual sports, just that seemed to fit.
I appreciate that. It's a good analogy, too.
It's a fascinating tension, isn't it? Our boy Big R is complicated.
He's a complex and deep human.
I appreciate that.
Guys, you know who else is complex and deep, man? And I want to introduce this this final segment and really just set the table for what will be a recurring segment here on the program. And the segment will be called Drisky Business, in which we do...
Can you do your breaking news song?
Dun, 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 Drisky Business.
Perfect.
Oh, that was beautiful. That was melodic, Big T.
I've got some vocal...
You got some vocal chops there. Works, man. I appreciate
it. We could talk about it off the air back in the green room. But anyway, Drisky Business is a segment where we do a lot of show prep, and by that I mean one of us looks at Driscoll's website a second or two before we go on the air. And today I believe that was you, Barnabas, and I want you to talk us through what you're seeing there.
Okay, so if you go to markdriscoll.org, so
I'm going to do that right now.
It's if you can keep yourself from smiling when you see this, you're a very hard-hearted person. So you see at the top it says Pastor Mark Driscoll. Touch of irony, considering he is not the pastor anywhere right now. Then you go past this little navigation bar and you see a picture of a gray-bearded Mark Driscoll kissing his wife on the head. So she's smiling at the camera. He is to profile. He's wearing his button-down vest.
Signature
button-down vest. And then next to this is the quote, "It's all about Jesus!" exclamation point. And the attribution is Pastor Mark, again, not a pastor, Pastor Mark, every year since 1995.
Wow. Man, that's
something. That is something. Yeah.
Give us a little commentary on that, Pipe. What are your initial thoughts?
You remember the David Letterman bit? Is this anything or is this something? Where he would have people come out and do like stupid human tricks and stuff, and he would decide if this was or was not something. Mm-hmm. This is something, people. That's what this is. it's all about Jesus. Every year since 1995.
I mean, what happened in 95? I feel like Drisky's about our age. Was that like when he graduated from high school or like?
Maybe, I mean,
that's when he planted Mars Hill.
He's like mid-40s. Oh, okay. Is that when
he's 40? He's 45. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So
he's older than us.
Yeah. He's that's why he can sport the gray beard and the vest, because he's becoming elder statesman now instead of young angry guy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how to say this tactfully, so I guess I'll just skip the tact.
Yeah.
The all about Jesus thing is a bit interesting considering the lengths they went to make it all about March book sales and other such things. Yeah. So I'll just leave that there and you can decide whether that's something or not. But it just struck me as a little bit funny.
And Bigar, what do you think, man?
Man, the Drisky thing has been poured and pawned over. And I've always been a fan, not denying that there aren't some issues there like there are with us and all of us.
Yeah.
And so I have a heart for Drisky. And so I think it's a really complex issue that I think none of us, you know, have a full handle on, you know, as is the case with all these types of things. But
we ought to write lengthy essays about it, because that's what you do when you don't have the full handle on something.
Right. I mean, at least 900 word essays. Correct. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think, man, it's hard to know what to do because I'm still – here's the thing, and maybe you guys feel differently, but let me just say it like this. Like I'm rooting for Drisky.
Yes. I'm totally rooting for him.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I still think he's a brother, and I'm still rooting for him. I have no idea what he's doing in Phoenix right now and all of these types of different moves he's made because, again, to live in his shoes and to live in his signature vests, I don't know what that's like.
But, maybe spend a day in his vest, and then you'll feel differently. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. And so it's
spend a day in his military jacket.
It's hard to be too glib about it because feel like I want to see him in person one day. And I want to buy him. I want to buy him a little red cup Starbucks, and I want to give him a hug, and I want to just say, Drisky, what's up? Like I'm on. You know, I'm all for you. I'm on Team Drisky.
Dude, you want to feel the artisan, you know, wool of that vest. You know,
right? If this is Twilight, I'm still Team Drisky.
Team Drisky, nice. I love it, man. Can we get those T-shirts made, Barnabas?
Only if you want the feminists to hate you.
Well, they probably already do, given that we're reformed men, you know.
Big key, way into Drisky. Drisky has not given up his reformdom. He's not copped out on doctrine. I mean, it's really interesting some of the places that he still sort of stands in. Give me your take on it.
Dude, I'm with you, man. I'm fascinated by him. And I mean, there was a time in my life where I listened to a lot of Drisky sermons and really benefited from that. So yeah, I mean, far be it from me as a sinner and as a guy who's done some pretty stupid things, probably worse than what Drisky's done. I mean, far be it from me to cast the first stone. So
at this point, it wouldn't be the first stone. You'd be piling on top of that.
I'd be piling on, man. But I mean,
it's Stonehenge, and you're throwing rocks at it right now.
Are we going to do Stonehenge tomorrow? That's my question. But I do think the marketing piece is interesting here, Barnabas, and that's kind of what you're getting at.
I'm not questioning his heart in this. It's the marketing presentation.
It's sort of the rebrand of Drisky, you know, vis-a-vis, like you said, moving from the angry young guy to the elder statesman, you know, the pastor label. I don't know. It's all very interesting, and because you work in marketing and because – you know, we've been in the book business for so long. Like, it's hard to see any of this stuff as genuine. I mean, I think that's the drawback from like having just been in the business for so long. You're always wondering like, what's the angle?
Piper feed in about a comment you just made a minute ago about the fact that he's calling himself a pastor, but he's not pastoring a church. I mean, and I'm just throwing out the question: Are we getting into semantics? Or do we mean that there needs to be a literal church he's pastoring before he can title himself with the word pastor?
That's an interesting question, because are you a pastor if you don't have a church? I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to.
I think people who – pastor is as often as not a self-identifying label as opposed to a positional thing. So I was obviously taking it from a positional standpoint, kind of poking at that. But I think that if somebody was a pastor – and they left their church unwillingly, so maybe they got voted out, maybe they did something wrong and left. Unless you voluntarily leave the ministry, I think you still see yourself as a pastor.
Right.
So, and it just, to me though, a pastor has a congregation.
Right.
Because, I mean, by definition, pastor is attached to shepherd. Shepherd has a flock. Right. So you're leading a group of people, and he's maybe leading what, an internet community? I mean, I feel like the correct label would be like preacher, speaker, author, none of which are disparaging terms.
But or maybe even reverend if he's ordained.
Yeah, I mean, or doctor if he's earned that, but I don't know if he has or not. I mean, pick your title, but pastor, you have a flock. You have a people. So that was a little bit strange. The other thing that I can't get my eye off of is this, it's all about Jesus, which goodness sakes I hope is true. But Pastor Mark, every year since 1995, that seems like Christian passive-aggressive trying to wipe away everything that happened since 1995 that might not have been so pretty. And it seems a bit – it's almost like saying, hey, I've always been all about this, even when there was all of this controversy, instead of maybe – and I realize he can't go through the rest of his life being defined by the controversy – but maybe addressing it a little more head on and just saying, hey, this is what we're about now. We've been through some stuff. We've come out on the other side, and now we're about something. This seems to be trying to say, almost treat it as if nothing ever happened. And it at least it feels that way to me. I could be misreading it.
Did you know Drisk has never had a problem like with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, though? You know, I mean, he almost, I guess, operates better when that's the case, man. I don't know. So, it's always kind of been a part of the brand, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this whole – the whole website, everything is setting him up to make a public comeback sometime in the next 18 months. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, my sense of things – and I was talking to somebody else who's kind of works in the Christian speaker sphere. You know, they're kind of helping book speakers and things like that. And he was saying he thinks it would be best if Driscoll waited another year just to give some more space. I tend to agree with that. And I'm not like – I don't – and again, this is not saying that Driscoll needs that time for his own soul because I don't know anything about his soul. Yeah. I'm saying because it takes that long for Christians to forget about what they were mad about.
Right.
And so he needs to be at least a little bit removed from that so that he can be received if he was to go be invited to speak at a Catalyst conference or whatever, you know, at some pastor's conference.
And I think and that's good. I think we can safely say no matter when or how he makes his comeback, in other words, like whatever vehicle or venue he decides to do that with, it's going to make national news headlines. There's no getting around that for him.
Dude, you know what's crazy?
Do it now or wait a year, and it's going to be something that everybody's buzzing and talking about. If he plants a new church or takes a position somewhere, everybody's going to be talking about it for at least an hour and a half, you know? Mm-hmm.
Guys, let me just say this, man, just to draw this topic to a close and really to kind of put a bow on this program. I hope his comeback goes better than Apollo Creed's comeback in Rocky IV. I mean, let's just say that.
Wow.
I mean, isn't our I don't mean to call my own thing powerful, but isn't that
the implications of that statement? We could spend a whole podcast on that.
Dude, it's huge. And you know, when I was like,
let's make that a bonus episode that you two record.
When I was at Driscoll's pool, you know, playing catch with him and his dogs in the pool, and he indicated that he wanted to make a comeback, and we went inside and we watched some film in his mansion, and I begged him not to. You know, he just moved forward with it, and all we can do is support him, fellas, and hope that it goes better.
I hope it does go better. I mean, I hope it goes as well as could be imagined, just for everyone's sake. He's going to take his licks when he comes back, but like we all said earlier, we all actually do root for him. We just find a lot of humor and oddity in the process of him coming back.
I actually hope it goes as well as Rocky Balboa's comeback in the film Rocky Balboa.
Ooh, nice.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that would be something.
That's a sign-off right there, Big T.
We have wandered to and fro. It's been a great app, man. I've enjoyed chatting about these things with you gentlemen. Any last things to say before I sign it off?
Do want to say thank you to Resonate Recordings again. Go to resonaterecordings.com and see the services that they offer. We appreciate their support of this podcast.
And I would like to say thank you to Sylvester Stallone for continuing to make Rocky movies. So have your people get in touch with this podcast. Maybe you too can sponsor an episode. And fellas, until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances. God invites us to cultivate thankful hearts by turning our eyes toward Him in good times and bad. To listen to more Abide Christian Meditations, just go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Christian Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.